You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Marathi.
Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Marathi. I'm Johnston, and with me again this week I have Mansour. Hello.
Hello.
So we're continuing through the new series of Doctor Who. We're doing the story and the engine this week, which is it's proved to be quite an interesting episode in terms of reception. I think it's very different for Doctor Who. In fact, it struck me as a little bit Big Finish-y. But in a good way, a good Big Finish. TV Doctor Who doesn't normally explore non-European locations, for example, and, except the odd trip to America. And, it was a very sort of, I guess, high concept story by TV Doctor Who standards. And I think, did Big Finish not exist, if Big Finish didn't exist, this would be a completely out there, different kind of story. But I actually think it's not, because we have had Big Finish, and Big Finish has enabled the Doctor to explore sort of more interesting locations than London and Cardiff. But overall, good episode, I thought. I enjoyed it. I'm going to jump straight in with, I enjoyed this one. It was sort of an interesting one, and it did different things, and it's good to see, even with a reduced episode count, we are doing different things. I really appreciated that. What were your sort of thoughts on it, Mansour?
For TV Doctor Who, it's refreshing that after 50 plus years, they can still do stories that feel fresh and unique for TV. But like I said, not so much Big Finish, but what my first thought was the novels, like both the BBC novels for the Eighth Doctor and the Virgin New Adventures for the Seventh, because of, well, firstly, this whole season has been focused on this God's arc, but then the particularly heightened magical realism stuff that was going on in this story, that felt very, very like some of the stuff that was going on in the novels. In good ways, again, like other stories this season, reminding me of some of the best extended media stuff.
I have seen reviews that have sort of said it managed to squeeze a lot of the depth that you get in those new adventures novels into a 45, 50 minute episode, which it's hard to argue with. There was a lot of really good stuff in there.
Yeah, I think the pacing stuff is still a thing for this whole era. Like every week, and again, like in a good way, in that I've seen people as well say that this could have been a two-part story, and I've seen that comment about a lot of episodes this season. I see the logic in not losing people's attention and rattling through a story and thinking about, the risk of people second screening it and having their phone in their hand and, being desperate to hold on to their attention. But I wish sometimes we could just let things breathe just for an extra 10, 15 minutes. And you mentioned Ghostlight. It made me think of that story a lot, in that I watched it, and the first time I didn't really 100% understand what was going on, but I just had this feeling that it was something special and interesting that I wanted to go back to, and that I wanted to put the effort into understanding more. I think it was the same with Ghostlight, that it wasn't intended to be so hard to figure out. That was maybe something that happened along the way in production, where things got shortened and it got squashed down and bits were lost. And I feel like almost the same has happened with a lot of episodes in this season of Doctor Who.
But it's, I mean, I completely agree with you. It, you know, I said, obviously, I got kind of Big Finish vibes from it, you know, some of the more experimental monthly range stuff. But at the same time, you're right, Ghostlight is a great example. And I suppose Warrior's Gate is the other one that comes to mind immediately. Episodes that it's all there, like everything is there. It's all available for you to figure out. It's all there for you to piece together. But maybe it just takes more than one go, more than one watch. It's asking questions of you as a viewer. It's giving you things to interpret and some very sort of abstract ideas and concepts in there. And that's great. I don't want Doctor Who to do that every week. Sometimes I do just want Monster Bad, run down corridor, press big red button to make it all go away. But Doctor Who's very guilty, new Doctor Who is very guilty of having a bit of a mid-season lull. And this, it doesn't seem to be happening here. Like, we've just had two very good, very enjoyable mid-season episodes. And I really do think this series is going from strength to strength. And this episode is just an example that, you know, not everything does have to be directly linked to the ongoing storyline. I know we're sort of playing with the themes of gods and storytelling and that kind of thing, which we've had quite a bit of. So we're still playing in the same themes, but we're not necessarily linking anything directly to current storyline. You know, there were references to gods, but these gods weren't.
It's a different type of gods.
Yeah.
It's like
Toymaker and Sutek. They were, you know, sort of.
Well, they were Earth-based because they talked about, like, the number of people affected, and they didn't talk about the whole universe. I think he talked about, like, the population of Earth. So it was almost like these were semi-mythological beings, but tied very specifically to the culture and history of Earth. That it wasn't the Sutek thing of they are these universe-spanning aliens that are worshipped on many worlds. It was Earth deities.
Yeah, which, like I say, it means we're still playing with those themes, but we're doing it in a slightly more, in some ways slightly more grounded, in other ways slightly more fairy tale-like, I guess. But the whole thing definitely sort of played with the idea of fairy tales and folk tales and that kind of thing. And I thought that was good. I like seeing that in Doctor Who, and I liked seeing it done that way in Doctor Who, because it's very easy to be a bit too on the nose with the idea of a fairy tale, maybe, or you know, linking things to a myth. You know, we've had, I don't know, Underworld is just the retelling of a Greek myth, and Horns of Nymon is, and all that kind of thing, and it's just a sci-fi retelling. This wasn't that. This was very much based in the Doctor Who universe and the way it is and the way we understand it, and I did particularly enjoy that. I also liked the fact that the setting was significant, Lagos, but it wasn't linked to any sort of historical event. Usually if we visit somewhere like that, it's linked to some historical idea or figure or event. And we didn't have that. It just happened to be the place where the Doctor was this week. And I liked that as well. You know, it let the setting live and breathe because it was about the setting and not a person. Which again, Doctor Who's very guilty of hooking things like this to an individual, a historical individual or whatever.
Or an event like Partition with Demons of the Punjab, which I liked as an episode.
Yes.
And it did have characters as well to give it that human dimension, but it was a story about Partition and the effect on people.
Yeah, very much so. Whereas this didn't feel the need to do that. This had its own thing to do. But I thought it used the setting very effectively. I thought it used it very well and kind of let us explore the Doctor's, the race he appears as now, I suppose. It allowed for a bit of conversation about that, which has been brushed you know, brushed past, brushed around, brushed over, I guess, is being mentioned in passing, but we've never had any kind of sort of real acknowledgement of it. And, you know, how the Doctor feels as though certain people do treat him differently now. And this is something we missed in the Jodie Whittaker era, I think, as well. I think we maybe needed something, you know, we never really explored the fact that the Doctor was a woman.
There's little bits. There was like little jokey moments, and then like in the Witchfinders, there was a bit more to it. But yeah, I definitely would have liked more of that. With I'm just completely speculating, but I wonder if it was like an anxiety, and maybe there's something about, I liked her costume as well, but maybe there was something about that filtering into her costume choice of, oh, let's make it something kind of cool looking, but also potentially a bit androgynous in terms of silhouette. And and maybe that was the same thing with like engaging with those ideas. But I feel like they've done it a fair bit in this season, like with Lux setting it up. There was like, I think, just, you know, the right amount there, and then talking about it a bit more explicitly here, and the conversation with Belinda as well to bring it out a bit more.
Yeah, it's good to see that it's maybe been a slow journey, but we are acknowledging the fact that the Doctor's not just a white bloke anymore. And that it should be doing. We should be doing that. You know, it's people are perceived differently based on whatever characteristic you want to name. And therefore, the Doctor is able to change those characteristics. Therefore, the Doctor will be perceived differently. So it's definitely something that should be explored. And I'm glad we've done that. So one drawback I can think of with this episode, it was doing an awful lot. It was giving the audience a lot to think about. But I'm kind of concerned that Belinda got relegated to the background a bit here. You know, she spent a fair chunk in the TARDIS. She comes out of the TARDIS. She wanders round. She meets, for some reason, one of the kids from Space Babies. We haven't quite figured that one out yet. And then enters the barbershop and doesn't do particularly much from that point onwards. And it's fine. We've had episodes before where companion has been sidelined, Doctor has been sidelined. But again, it's an 8-episode series. We had an episode last week where Belinda was in one scene. I feel as though that we're nearly 3/4 of the way through the series, and for a quarter of it, we've not really spent any time with this new character, which, you know, bit of a concern. In a longer season, it wouldn't bother me at all. Even in a 13-episode season, I probably wouldn't even notice. But it's the fact that of the, what have we had now? Five episodes we've had. Belinda's not really been around for two of them, or she wasn't. She was barely in one at all and hasn't had much to do here. I know that I've sort of complained about number of episodes in the season before, and I know it's a very, very easy thing to do as a fan, go, ooh, I want more. And I'm well aware there's probably a very good production reason we're only getting 8. I'm judging by how fantastic the series looks that a lot more work is going into those 8 episodes than perhaps went into 13 20 years ago. But I really do feel that it's costing getting to know companions, and we've had 2 companions in 18 episodes by the time this series ends. And I still don't feel as though we got to know Ruby. In fact, I feel as though we got to know Ruby quite a lot more last week, as I said, when we were discussing it. And I have the same concern about Belinda. Like, really, we've had 3 and a bit episodes of her at this point, and we are heading towards the end of the series now. It could well be that, considering Russell T. Davies has said there's some kind of reveal in next week's episode, it could well be that we're kind of stuck in that kind of finale zone where there isn't much room for change or development or that kind of thing. And I just hope we've not missed an opportunity to get to know Belinda better. Like, I guess with Ruby, we got, like, we had an episode that was completely Ruby based in the last season, and we did get to know her a little bit more. We've not had that with Belinda, and evidence would suggest we're not going to, because the next three episodes appear as though they're going to be quite significant, and I don't think we're going to take a week off to just hang out with Belinda for a bit.
Yeah, it's agree, and especially as I think I've enjoyed her character a lot more. I think she's been given a bit more dimension than Ruby right from the start. I think she's been better served by this, like, her first few stories and script to give her a bit more depth. At the same time, we've kind of had this, like, rerun and recap at the start of every episode now of, like, her reminding the Doctor to get us home. And it feels like almost like a recap for the audience's benefit in case you're just tuning in that week to, like, remind us of the setup of the show, like the intro to Quantum Leap, and just like restate the mission of getting her home. And I see the logic of that, but I also hope that we don't keep hammering that too much and we just do continue to see more dimensions to her in the last three episodes. But I think you're right. Like, if this was like a 13 episode series, or Belinda was sticking around for more than one season, I don't think there was much need for her to be in the second half of the story. She wasn't bad when she turned up, and she was very given a very sort of active role and had some impact on the story. But it was quite, I felt like she slipped into quite a generic companion mode. And I don't feel like loads of time has passed, but she almost had a lot of, like, knowledge and skill that was very doctorish, and I didn't know how that developed so quickly. Have we had a time jump or a gap, do you think, at some point? Maybe after episode three?
I get the impression that maybe, yeah, after the well, and maybe they were doing other stuff while Lucky Day was going on. It feels like we've had a jump, but she's still saying, "Doctor, you need to get me home now." So it doesn't feel like it's been a big jump,
but tonally, maybe
we've had room for a few novels in there or something like that.
I think there must be something, because just like, she's not had a rest since Robot Revolution, and she's human, she needs to sleep. And also, just tonally, the well was pretty traumatic, and it feels like there must have been some sort of gap between that and then kind of the way things feel in this episode.
In fact, I don't think the fact that she got shot in the well has been referenced at all since, has it?
I was thinking about just the episode in general, but yeah, she got shot and died.
Didn't die, but got shot and had to recover from getting shot.
Yeah.
With sort of TARDIS medicine, I'd like to think getting shot on an alien planet when you're being stalked by some horror creature is going to traumatise somebody a little bit. Like, that's the sort of thing you'd expect to happen. But yeah, it's not been mentioned again. Like, the even Finnish boxer mentioned the Mara at the start of Mordred Undead, you know.
Yeah, so it feels like, you know, the Big Finish box set might start there, and she is a little bit understandably traumatized, and then get to the point of where she's a bit more relaxed and happy, and maybe time has passed for her to watch the Doctor and pick some stuff up from him.
I'd hope so. It's feeling very rushed, which, fine, we knew that was going to happen going into it. I wasn't 100% convinced I wanted a new companion this series. I'd have been quite happy if we'd have just carried on with Ruby as we did last series, picked up second sit. But I know Russell T. Davies likes to change his regulars around, and Belinda is a brilliant character. I don't want to play the who's the better companion game, but I think just in terms of how the characters are written, I think there's a lot more potential with Belinda than there is with Ruby. Just my concern is we're not going to get to properly see that potential. Maybe because we're most of the way through the series now, and haven't spent that much time with her still. You never know. Maybe we'll get something a bit more Belinda-centric.
Well, you mentioned like all the stuff for the finale, and I was thinking just after this episode, oh, you mentioned the Space Babies as well, and I was just thinking how all of these, there are quite a few lingering threads and mysteries that need to be wrapped up in the next three episodes, or at least acknowledged, you would hope. So Mrs. Flood, obviously, feels like a given. Now we have this new Space Babies thing. We have the boss, and is that the same as Mrs. Flood, or is that someone different? We have, like, what's happened to the Earth. We've got no indication of what's actually going on there, and presumably reverse that. I'm sure there's more. Like, I think it seemed, I expect Ruby and Conrad are both going to be back. Mel is going to be in it. It feels like a lot, and I'm expecting like a lot of this won't be in the Interstellar Song Contest, because a lot of that's going to be in space, and some of these elements are quite Earth-based. So that's a lot to squeeze into the last two episodes. And yeah, I think you're right. Like, how much space does that leave for like any detailed introspection or character development for Belinda?
Have we had confirmation of the length of the final episode yet? Because I know it's getting a cinema screening, isn't it? Has that said how long it is?
Probably says somewhere. But I think if it was longer than 55 minutes,
yeah,
we would have heard. I mean, that's
what I'm thinking. Is it going to be one of those, you know, actually it's 75 minutes type things? But there's no indication, is there?
No. And I feel like if, like you say, the cinema listings must be up. And if it was that sort of running time, I feel like we would know by now. People would be talking about it, I'd assume. These episodes have run quite short. Like, was it the Chibnall era where we tended to get like longer episodes that were like bumping up against an hour sometimes? And it feels like we've gone the other way. Like, weirdly, in the age of streaming, we've gone the other way to like squeeze into like a very specific broadcast television slot of 45 minutes.
I'm just trying to find the episode lengths now. Because, yes, I think you're right. 46, 44, 47, 46, and 47 we've had so far. So they've all beaten 45 minutes. And, you know, I remember the days when an episode would come in at 42 minutes and, oh, that's it, it's a disaster and the series is being cancelled because it's 3 minutes short.
I don't know, is this... I wonder if this is, rather than like broadcast schedules, given that the international distributor is Disney Plus, is this again like the anxiety of holding people's attention, and just, is this like some sort of limit that Russell T. Davies has set for himself? Or maybe it's budget as well, that like when you're making it with like a heightened budget and production quality, an extra 5 minutes costs a lot of money.
Well, yeah, there's that. And I mean, time with streaming just doesn't matter. Like, you know, we've got a new series of Stranger Things coming this year, and we've basically been told it's eight movies, it's eight films, lengthwise.
So,
things have seemed to have got longer with streaming, but then again, at the same time, We still seem to be sticking fairly rigidly to 45, 50 minutes. I don't know. Mm. Can anyone say how long an episode of Doctor Who is now? I suppose it still has to be broadcast on BBC One. That's still its home.
It is, but BBC does not, because BBC is commercial free, the programming doesn't line up in nice, neat hourly slots anyway. You know, if it's like, and even Channel 4 doesn't seem to line up neatly. It's more the American networks where, like, you know, programming starts on the hour and you have this amount of time and the rest is sold to advertisers, and that's all quite constrained. So, because, like, yeah, like with the Chibnall era, we had, like, things growing a bit longer and that. And I remember, like, there were quite a few episodes where we had them a bit longer and they're overran, like the series 3 finale, and they would be edited down in other regions because those other regions had the that sort of restrictions on, no, we've sold that advertising space. Like I think it was the series 3 finale where there were scenes that were cut out for the American broadcast, I think.
Yeah. I'll never forget how the one that sort of weirded me out the most of like how they've managed to get away with it was the series 9, both finale episodes were quite long. Like I remember them going, heaven sent is this long and hell bent is even longer, is this long.
Yeah.
So we actually got two extended length episodes, which at the time, which, you know, we're only talking 10 years ago, was virtually unheard of. Like, you know, that's two extra long episodes. And like you say, in the Chibnall era, we got spoiled a bit by episode lengths. Like it was, they said, you know, episodes are 50 minutes now. We're doing fewer episodes, but episodes are longer. But here it seems to be fewer episodes and shorter episodes. And I'm not entirely sure. Like you say, it could be a budget thing. And also, I think part of it should be down to how long does the story take to tell. You know, this isn't classic Doctor Who anymore. It's not, we've got to have a cliffhanger every 25 minutes. You know, it's not even 10, 15 years ago where we have to have a cliffhanger every 45 minutes. The format of the show has changed. It has evolved. Like I say, I suspect it's just the number of sort of working hours that have to go into making it look as good as it does. And we've repeatedly talked about how good this series looks. You know, a lot of people said that the Disney money didn't appear on screen last year. Well, it sure as hell has this year. In every single episode, it's looked exceptional.
And I sort of see that, but then at the same time, like if I was extending some of these episodes by 5-10 minutes, a lot of that would be like character moments or dialogue heavy scenes. So not talking like loads of effects and, you know, expensive setups, but so that's what makes me think maybe is it actually more about like a self-imposed limit of no, we're going to hold people's attention and to be fair, I would prefer something is a bit short and leaves you wanting more to use the Big Finish example or even, you know, some classic Doctor Who, like to pad things out a bit longer than the story deserves or the story needs. And, you know, to sort of artificially hold yourself to too long a running time and go the other direction.
Which I suppose must be an easy trap to fall into.
It's especially, you know, if you're a writer for Big Finish, you're given the brief of all of our stories have to be X number of CDs long, right? Or you have to fill this box set, or you have to fill these slots. You can't write a story that's like 3/4 of a CD long. It has to be, you know, that 60 minutes. I know they play around a little bit with like sometimes squeezing 3 short episodes onto a disc, but it's generally they're pretty like, you know, it's an hour's worth of story on each CD.
I find it amazing that it's still sort of dictated by CD length in 2025, because there can't be much audio drama produced now that is dictated by can we fit it on a CD.
Well, I think there's
really can't.
But it's Doctor Who. There'll be like that core of people who will complain if, like, you know, some releases go digital only, or you know, they can't continue.
Which we have seen. Yeah, they are announcing digital only releases now, and there are people that are not buying them because they can't have them on.
They're very tentative.
Disc.
Yeah, and you can tell it's like with like recast, they're sort of like that you can tell that Big Finish are a bit anxious about jumping into that, and they're just trialing it to see how people react before really going for it.
And I suppose that's the other thing that sort of dictates Big Finish. It's what do people buy? What will people?
They're much more constrained by that because you can put something out on the BBC and there aren't advertisers to keep happy. Viewing figures aren't the be all and end all. It's about doing what the charter says you're supposed to do, which is not just about numbers of viewers. So you have a lot more flexibility. Whereas Big Finish, I think as I understand it, they put out a lot of stuff, but it sounds like their margins are quite narrow. And so they have to be a bit more, maybe not mercenary, but they have to be a bit more reactive to, well, people will buy more stuff if there's a Dalek on the cover. So we'll put out a lot of Dalek stories. And it still lets them do, good stuff within those constraints, but I think they are more constrained than people making Doctor Who on TV.
And of course, they're also constrained by Doctor Who on TV as well.
Yeah, what they're allowed to do, because they can't.
Considering what they do produce and considering some of the stuff they come out with, it's actually a minor miracle that it's as good as it is, because they do have, imagine if the TV series were to look at Facebook, Twitter, Gallifrey Base and gauge what it had to do based on that, which I'm not saying is what Big Finish does. Big Finish looks at what sells and what doesn't and goes, okay, as you say, Daleks were on the cover of that one and it sold better than anything else. We'll put more Daleks on covers.
And the opposite way around, where stuff that I really enjoyed, like the novel adaptations, doesn't continue because people weren't buying them in the numbers that they buy other stuff. Well, Frobisher is a big example, a big one as well. Chris and Roz, they attempted to bring them back, but seems like people just have something that but the numbers aren't there for those like comics and books characters coming in.
I suppose at the end of the day, they originated in a series of 30-odd-year-old novels that are very difficult to get hold of. There's an awful lot of, if you look at the list of new adventures and you've never read any of them, it's quite overwhelming, as somebody that's not actually read all that many. I can kind of get it. I kind of get why people go, yeah, I'm just not engaging with that. Which is a shame, because I quite liked the novel adaptations. I quite like Chris and Roz, especially the way they have been sort of interpreted on audio.
Because they have, maybe it was to do with the order as well, but they have done their origin story. I don't think it was their first audio, but they have done Original Sin. So like with Bernice, they've done an adaptation of Love and War. So even if you don't track down those novels, you can still get a performed introduction to these companions.
Yeah, absolutely. But dragging us back to the story and the engine, it's. I hope that Belinda doesn't become that kind of character, actually, a character that people don't go for in spin-off, because we didn't really see or hear much from her on screen. She's a great character, just my concern is she's been a little bit underserved. That may all change in the next few episodes. But
she's been compared to Tegan, who's quite a well-regarded character now. I think at certain points was dismissed as like the one who's always complaining and just doesn't want to be there. But I think there's a lot more to both Tegan and Belinda.
I think we've had a very good reassessment of Tegan over the last few years. I think, I do remember a time where everybody just dismissed 80s Who as dreadful and anybody involved with it was also dreadful, and therefore Tegan was lumped in on the list of worst companions ever and da-da-da-da.
But even worse, because she dared to not be in love with travelling in the TARDIS, and maybe that sort of set some fans against her, of those fans who would fantasize about going off in the TARDIS with the Doctor when they were children, and oh, there's this person who doesn't want to be there. Like, what's her problem?
I also wonder if the fact it took Janet Fielding a while to start regularly doing Big Finish contributes to that as well. Like, a lot of people have said that, you know, Big Finish has done absolute wonders for, you know, the Sixth Doctor and Ace and Adric, even, you know, another late to Big Finish, but nevertheless, we've had some great stuff with Adric there now. So I wonder if that's kind of a contributing factor as well, like, in terms of people that are looking at the ongoing classic Doctor Who Big Finish, I wonder if, you know, there being no new Tegan material has perhaps skewed the view a little bit, and obviously that's been fixed in the last 10 years. Maybe. Nevertheless, it's, you know, Tegan is beloved. Tegan came back. Everyone was happy that Tegan came back in Power of the Doctor. And I just hope that there's the platform for, if nothing else, more appreciation of Belinda in the future. Because it kind of doesn't really feel like that at the minute. There's just not much to work with. Yeah, anyway, we'll move on because we can keep going on in circles on this one. The Doctor then. So we've kind of mentioned that, you know, that the Doctor found visiting Lagos, you know, he found it as a safe space. The barbershop especially was a safe space. It's somewhere he felt comfortable going in his current regeneration. I love the fact that we are referring to off-screen adventures with the 15th Doctor, because everything feels like it's happened quickly. Again, I'm complaining about shorter episode count. I need to get over it. But everything feels like it's happened really quickly. It doesn't feel like this Doctor's gone off and had loads and loads of adventures. But actually, there are some fairly solid gaps in his timeline where he could have done and presumably did, the biggest one being in between seasons. And, you know, we had a Christmas special sort of set in that period. So just sort of, have you any thoughts about the Doctor in this week's episode, and have we learned a bit about him and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think the off-screen adventures are good, and they add some depth. And I don't know, I feel like I'm finding it hard to be specific, but I feel like there's more to the Doctor's performance this season. Because was season two filmed? I know season two was filmed ages ago, but like, how close was it to season one? Because it almost feels like he's had some time to settle in and to get a sort of deeper hold on what his Doctor is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely been some kind of subtle shift in the performance. And we discussed this at the start, you know, when we watched The Robot Revolution, we kind of discussed this then and kind of said, actually, there's not been much of a shift, but yeah, a few more episodes in, I agree with you. He just seems to have gelled with the role a bit more. I don't think there's been any sort of huge conscious change in the way the character's done. It's not like, you know, Patrick Troughton being a very different Doctor by sort of Tomb of the Cybermen than he was in Power of the Daleks, but yeah, he certainly feels more comfortable in the role. And I really don't think there was that big a gap between filming seasons.
One and two. But then Christopher Eccleston changed in his season. I think, I'm trying to track it back, but it might even be like by production block. Like, I feel like Eccleston's performance when it started in the earliest filmed episodes, that it was a bit broader. It was a little bit more CBBC, where he was getting his head around the role, and then as time went on, his Doctor became, there was still some of that like lightness and comedy, but it became a bit more real and a bit more grounded as he got further in. And maybe it's just that same thing, so even if season two was filmed right after, it was just one of the later production blocks effectively.
Yeah, I think every Doctor has settled into the character over time. And, you know, the writers become more confident with how to write the character as well. It must be so difficult to come in as a guest writer and write for a brand new Doctor who hasn't actually appeared on screen yet. I know most of the last series was written by Russell T. Davis, who was obviously trying to steer it in a certain direction, but new voices have helped, I think, in this case.
Definitely for this season. I think that's been, both for the Doctor and the stories and in general, just having that bit more of a mix and having Russell T. Davis, I'm sure, like very closely involved in rewrites to make it feel cohesive. I think that's like throughout like both the first era and this one, like some of the strongest stories are the ones where a writer has come with like the first draft and those ideas and that freshness. And then he's done sometimes very extensive rewrites, but that sometimes that collaboration, I'm curious, like if there's a Writer's Tale Volume 2, I'm curious to know like how his process has changed for this era and if he's being more hands-off or he's still, you know, working in the exact same way as he did first time around. But I mean, coming back to the Doctor in this episode, that, yeah, so I'm seeing that bit of a subtle shift from where he was in like Church on Ruby Road, Space Babies, right at the start. And there's like moments in Joy to the World where you got to see like some very different sides to him as well. But I'm also a bit anxious that, yeah, potentially with like three episodes left, I don't think this Doctor is going to get the type of arc or progression. And actually, to be fair, I don't think Jodie Whittaker was well served by this either as well, by ending up a different person at the end of their era than they were at the start. I think 10, 11 and 12 all had that in really interesting ways. 12 being my favourite example of that, of how he changes so much from 8 to 9 and then to 10 from those seasons. But I don't think Jodie Whittaker or Chittagatwa so far have had anything as dramatic as that.
Everyone says the big moment with the 12th Doctor, with Capaldi, was a Zygon inversion, you know, the big sort of monologue in that really sort of let us see, I mean, Peter Capaldi acting at full throttle, because there are a lot of quite reasonable sort of discussions about how, okay, we've got this, we've got someone who we know is an absolutely phenomenal actor who is just not being, maybe challenged isn't the right word, but you know what I mean, not being given material that necessarily lets them show really what they can bring to the table. And then we suddenly got it in that episode, and it was kind of a big moment for that Doctor. And I think maybe we need that moment. I think we've had a few moments that could have been that moment. But going back to, I'm like a stuck record here, we've just not seen enough of him. We've just not had enough of this Doctor on screen.
Yeah, and there are. Yeah. And maybe he's a Doctor who doesn't like monologue as extensively as Capaldi, who was my favourite. Who's my favourite Doctor, I think. But especially with like his final speech, where he gets like, he has two or three regeneration speeches layered on top of each other. There are times when I think that his stuff could have been cut down a bit, little bit. But like, for example, the speech with Conrad, that was like more understated. And maybe that's who this Doctor is, that he isn't as dramatic or over the top as some of the previous ones will have been. But it's almost, yeah, a bit of that sort of Patrick Troughton energy of like being a bit more subtle and maybe being a bit scarier because of that. Like Sylvester McCoy had a bit of that sometimes as well. So I think that's all very in keeping with other versions of the Doctor.
Yeah, perhaps. Nevertheless, it's good to see. It is good to see the way that Chittagatwa performs the role is evolving, is changing, is becoming more Doctor-like. Like, still a very unique Doctor, but still definitely the Doctor. And I think there's a really good balance of that. And I really hope we do get more. You know, there are rumours that this is his last season. I hope that isn't the case. I hope we get another, at least one more season with this Doctor, because there's definitely potential for more, I think, from the character. However, not the only Doctor in this episode. Big surprise, wasn't expecting it at all. We got to see the Fugitive Doctor for a brief moment, which I really wasn't expecting. I really, really thought we were perhaps done with that character. I thought maybe that character was something that appeared in the Chibnall era and that was it. And I've mentioned in the past, actually, about how I'm not a huge fan of how when a new era of Doctor Who comes along, a new showrunner in particular, a lot of stuff kind of just stops and disappears. Whereas we really are reaching into other eras with this one. You know, we have Kate Stewart, who's come all the way through from the early half of the Moffat era. We've had the Fugitive Doctor now. We've even had Melg from the classic series. And it's just nice to see that we're not afraid to kind of bring things from the show's recent past through here. And I hope that we do get another proper Fugitive Doctor episode sometime. I'm not talking about a little cameo. I'm hoping we get, for some reason, the current Doctor has to get into an adventure with the Fugitive Doctor. I suppose the closest example I've got would be Coda from Once and Future, where the War Doctor and the Fugitive Doctor just sort of happen to end up in an adventure together. I'd like to see something like that.
Or a special... Like, there's all sorts of rumours about what will happen if there's a hiatus on TV, and, you know, there's talk of, like, celebrity casting and, like, having a different Doctor every year for a TV movie. But, and, you know, we might finally get our Paul McGann movie that's been, like, everyone's wanted for the last few decades, and they might do a Joe Martin movie. You know, like, all the sort of Tales of the TARDIS stuff and, you know, Rottle Davis's vague comments about bi-generation potentially being this retroactive thing, which we've heard nothing about since the Giggle.
Baiting fandom.
I feel like that was just him just just kind of getting a bit carried away. but maybe that was set up for, oh, you know, there'll be a Sylvester McCoy special every now and then when our main Doctor isn't available or is busy doing a play or something. And yeah, Joe Martin would be great to see doing something like that. Because you're right, you don't want her to just keep being the cameo Doctor, you know, who turns up and, like, everyone really just wants more of, but we never get more than, like, that fleeting look at. At a certain point, you have to stop teasing and give us something more substantial. And there was a line, and a very in keeping with, like, the whole theme of stories about, like, what was it? Like, something about her story might be finished one day, or...
Certainly a hint.
Something like... So, yeah, is that hinting?
Which I hope so. But we'll see. I'm not expecting it, but I'd very much like it. It felt... I suspect that for COVID reasons... We never quite got what the original plan for Joe Martin was in the Jodie Whittaker era, in the Chibnall era. I always felt as though there was meant to be another episode.
Was there a plan? Like, but Chibnall's been a bit vague about, like, what actually was going on there, and maybe that's. That's fine that, like, you know, you leave that vague and even the author doesn't know the answers, but he's almost, I feel like he said things recently that make it sound like he didn't know himself, what, you know, where she sits in the timeline or who she is.
I don't necessarily need confirmation of the timeline, but there's a load of stuff with, you know, the whole division thing was never really wrapped up. I don't know. It feels as though that there are dangling threads there. And
there is Big Finish, but...
Well, we know that Big Finish 13th Doctor stuff isn't going to deal with that because it's set before Flux.
And there's Fugitive Doctor box sets, but again, like, I don't think Big Finish are going to constraints. They're not going to be allowed to reveal some earth-shattering thing that changes the whole nature of Doctor Who, which, by the way, is what Russell Davies is hinting at next week's episode being, like, based on his Doctor Who magazine comments. That's not going to happen in Big Finish. So again, they're constrained because, like, what really radical or amazing things can they do with revelations about the Fugitive Doctor? And the same with the War Doctor, you know, they're working within the constraints of, like, we know where he ends up, and I've liked a lot of War Doctor stuff, but it limits what they can do with that concept and that setup.
Yeah, we have the start point, we have the end point, and we have not a lot to go on with the character, and we're never going to get what we got with the Eighth Doctor at Big Finish, which is a whole era that covers so many aspects of his life and all that kind of thing, because
the future of the
Doctor's characters aren't set up like that. They're not the current Doctor at Big Finish at all.
And even when the Eighth Doctor wasn't, even when we had the Ninth Doctor, the gap was so big that you could almost still view the Eighth Doctor as having this open-ended history, which is starting to close off now, but still.
I saw the Eighth Doctor's, the Eighth Doctor as the current Doctor at Big Finish, right the way through to the end of Stranded, easily. It was ongoing adventures with a Doctor Who. Okay, by that stage, we did know how he ended. We did know how he regenerated, but it was a hell of a long way to get there.
Yeah. There's still a bit of a gap, it feels, between, like, the Liv and Helen era and then the Time War era. It feels like I need to catch up with the last few box sets, so I don't know if that's been filled in even more, but it feels like there's still a bit of a sort of jump, a vague period there.
There's still questions to be answered, certainly. Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting, I think, that the story in the engine has not given us an awful lot to talk about as an episode. Very good episode. I definitely need to watch it again. I've only seen it the once, and I think we're absolutely right in terms of it being a bit ghost-light-ish. You need to give it a couple of goes before you get everything. But it's interesting that it's given us an awful lot to talk about the wider Doctor Who universe and, you know, various implications here and there and things we can compare it to and not compare it to and all that sort of thing. And at the end of the day, for the first time ever, as I said at the very start, I feel like we've had a Big Finish story on screen, and that's not a bad thing. Like, it feels like we've had a really, really good Big Finish story. Like, someone has picked one of the best and just put it on screen instead of onto a CD. And I've really enjoyed that. So it's nice to explore what it has explored, you know, folklore and stories and other locations and the Doctor's, the way the Doctor is perceived across different regenerations. There's so much in there to pick apart. And it has kind of led us on quite an interesting journey of discussion to various places. So I'm writing this down as a good episode, and I'm writing everything down as a good episode. I don't think we've had a dud at all this series. I don't think we've even come close to a dud this series so far.
No, I think it's like same as series one. Like, the once you get past the first episode, it's been really strong for me. And I think this year's opening, it was pretty good as well. I'm a bit anxious about the finale. I've booked to go see it in the cinema, and I did book last year, but I was ill, so I couldn't make it, and I was a bit relieved because I didn't end up traveling across London. I booked for it, like, somewhere just around the corner this year, and I'm a bit more optimistic this year, but also that there are so many elements to nod to, at least, or wrap up in a satisfying way. I'm really, really curious how those last two episodes are gonna try and wrap things up and give a decent amount of closure to everything and tell a decent story in their own right.
And we know so little about those last two episodes as well, which I mean, last week's, you know, we don't really know anything about the rest of this series, to be honest. We didn't know anything going into Story in the Engine or very little about it. We don't know much about Intergalactic Song Contest beyond, you know, the basic concept of what's going on. And the finale, all we have really is a title.
We have some ideas of, like, a few people confirmed to be in it, and I guess it's speculation technically, but, like, an idea of what story elements you would expect to be resolved or paid off.
Yeah, there's enough to speculate around.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you're right. Like, in terms of what actually happens, don't have a clear, like, we don't have a clear idea of what the actual story is going to be.
We don't even have an idea of the villain. Like, we all went into the finale last time with, we'd sort of figured out it was Sutek, hadn't we? I mean, Connor said on this podcast months before, oh, it's going to be Sutek. Which was a wild stab in the dark, but it was a wild stab in the dark that proved to be correct. We don't have that. We're not sat here going, oh, Scaroth's going to be in the finale. That's my guess. There doesn't seem to be any of that.
The rumours going around, which are probably have no basis whatsoever, but it seems like the classic things of Omega, the Rani, the Master. I've stayed away from, like, specific actual verified spoilers. Apparently there's some dialogue leaks from the finale that I've tried to avoid. But yeah, those bits of speculations about who the villain is, it can't be one of those. People are saying, like, maybe Mrs. Flood is the Rani, but let's see how it pans out, but, like, I'd be a bit disappointed because she doesn't seem very Rani-ish at all to me.
No.
And no, Omega, I don't know how it could be Omega. I mean, the Master, at least there is, like, a history of a relationship with that character that's been really well established in modern day Doctor Who that you can lean on. But Omega, like, even hints at that?
Stretching it a bit. Oh, well, we'll continue in our speculations and see what we can come up with next week. But that's probably all we've got time for now, so we'll leave it there. But yeah, roll on the Intergalactic Song Contest, and hopefully it'll leave us with a lot to talk about. And, well, as we've said, there's some kind of reveal coming.
Maybe. I think the last performer in the song contest will be a masked singer, and it will be Omega wearing his mask.
Played by Paul McGann.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, listeners. And on that note, we will leave it there. So thanks very much for joining me, Mansour. We'll be back to discuss the Intergalactic Song Contest next week. But until then, goodbye.